Welcome to Let's Talk About It, co-hosted by Maria Wyatt and Scott Dudley. Presented by Imperial County Behavioral Health Services and brought to you as a podcast by KXORadio.com.
This is Let's Talk About It, your voice for wellness here in the Mexicali and Imperial Valleys. Yes, Maria, I sat at, Maria's up in Sacramento at a wonderful conference. It's a quarterly conference of all the alcohol and drug administrators in the whole state of California. So she's up there learning stuff and bragging about some of the stuff we do over there, which is kind of cool because other counties are just beginning to try some of the evidence-based alcohol and drug treatment strategies that we have had in place for like a year and a half. And they're standing up this meeting in Sacramento bragging about hey, we think this is a really good idea, and they're like all optimistic about it. We're like, yeah, we're kind of fine-tuning ours because it's been around a year and a half. So, and she's really good at raising up her hand and being able to say stuff like that. So she's not here, but my guest is here, Dr. Alejandra Postlewaite. Are you child certified psychiatrist?
I'm going to be child certified in November.
That's where they put you in a room with like some blocks and circles, and if you can get all the blocks and circles into the right things, you're still child. She's like, okay, she passes. She's still a child.
I'm a child and adolescent psychiatrist, and will be board certified hopefully in November.
Nice. And you're relatively local, right?
I'm from Mexicali. Yes, I grew up in Mexicali.
Did you target this? Was this something? When did you first say, "Hey, you know, I'm going to be
a child and adolescent
psychiatrist"?
Back in high school. Back when I was in high school, I decided to do psychiatry because I wanted to be a child and adolescent psychiatrist.
Was it like the suffering of your peers, or?
No. Well, it's I've always enjoyed working with children first. And I was very interested in the mind and how the mind and body correlate and work together. And I was very interested in psychoanalysis, psychotherapy, and Freud. Back in high school, I started reading Freud. And I thought about psychology, but I thought that going into psychiatry would be a little bit more, it would target different areas and would be a little bit more complete. Because you look at all the mind and the body as a whole.
Nice. How is it to come back to the Imperial Valley and Mexicali Valleys and be a part of the community again? Is that
kind
of special?
It's very different than when I left. I left when I was 17 years old. I'm 33 now. I came back.
I was here when you left, huh?
You were here? Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. I've been here like 22 years, so.
I came back briefly for a year and a half. Between medical school and residency, but you know I've been gone for a long time, so it was nice to come back.
Nice. Have you settled? Is this where you want to be? I mean, are you comfortable now, or?
I might stay here for a while.
Nice. And I think in terms of just the people in the valley, it's nice when our best and brightest, if you will, come back and nest here for a little while and provide us a little bit of help.
Well, thank you.
So. Welcome.
Thank you.
So we do have a topic today. 337-8874 is the phone number. Let's talk about it as a show. Alejandra Postlewaite, and she's a child and adolescent psychiatrist working for Imperial County Behavioral Health.
Yes.
That's handy. I'm glad you have it on your shirt.
Yes.
I can remember it that way. And our topic today is obsessive compulsive disorder in children.
In children, yes. And it's a little bit different than in adults. There's basically one thing that makes it different.
Should we start by the big picture thing, kind of dial it back to children? Does that make sense?
Yeah, however you want.
Okay, so in general, what is obsessive compulsive disorder?
It's recurrent thoughts and actions. Basically what the name says, obsessions and compulsions. So the child has recurrent thoughts or recurrent ideas that are intrusive in nature and are constant, and he or she needs to do a compulsion in order to lessen that anxiety that the obsessions cause.
No.
But, I mean, they don't necessarily need to do a compulsion.
Okay.
But usually it is accompanied by a compulsion.
Okay, now, I get some pretty compelling things in my life. Let's see if we can figure out where it separates. I mean, for example, the alarm clock rang this morning,
mm-hmm.
and I woke up and immediately had the thought, I've got to get up and get ready and go to work.
That's good.
And, you know, it was going to haunt me, that thought, unless I acted on it, unless I began to follow through with a behavior, like, mm-hmm. you know, the whole taking a shower and everything. But that's not obsessive compulsive, even though it's fairly obsessive in terms of its regular predictability, I suppose,
mm-hmm.
and definitely almost always leads to the behavior.
Mm-hmm. Well, it needs to be obsessions and compulsions that are interfering with your daily function.
Oh, and that actually is supporting my daily function. So.
Exactly. I mean, there's people who are OCPD, which is obsessive compulsive personality disorder.
Those are the people that have the red pens next to the blue pens on the left
uh-huh,
side, and the
exactly.
left side, and if it's on the left side, there's something wrong.
People who are very organized, who are very, you know, everything is in place, but it's ego syntonic. So it's something that you, I mean, it's not ego dystonic, which it doesn't, I mean, you're okay with it, you're not distressed with it, so that's OCPD.
It seems like the thought that would be at the base of this, or the belief that would be at the base of this, would be, as long as I maintain my immediate universe in absolute control, everything's fine and I'm safe, which, of course, probably is not ultimately true, but it doesn't, people actually appreciate these people sometimes, I suppose.
The OCPDs, yes. But obsessive compulsive disorder is another animal on its own. It's something different. It interferes with your daily function. It affects the kids at school. It affects the kids at home. It affects the kids with peers. It's really distressing. But it's a very, very treatable disorder.
So there's a wide spectrum of obsessive compulsive elements to being human, I suppose.
Exactly.
Is there a part of the brain that really dials this in?
Yeah, I mean, it's the prefrontal cortex. All this are hypotheses, right? I mean, we don't really know exactly what part of the brain.
I'm not going to let you cut my brain open and look while I'm still alive, okay?
But there's hypothesis that there's connections in the prefrontal cortex with the basal ganglia that are, not connected good, if you will.
So when the prefrontal cortex is like the part right behind your... Forehead,
yeah,
more or less,
exactly.
Okay.
And actually, when OCD is extremely, but I'm talking extremely severe, there's a neurosurgery that could be done at experimental. It's still in research phase, where part of the brain is sort of separated a little bit. It's called like the cingulotomy. Part of the brain that connects.
Smart lobotomy. A well-informed neurological
exactly.
lobotomy.
Exactly. I mean, I've only referred one patient in my life to that procedure, and it was a very, very, very sick woman who had all the treatment in the planet, and nothing worked for her.
Well, I guess because this disorder can really grab people in its most severe form, it's mm-hmm. just non-ceasing in its intensity.
Mm-hmm. It could be. But for kids, although the literature does state that it could be chronic in nature, cognitive behavioral therapy with high doses of medication really, really works beautifully. There's a cognitive behavioral therapy program called Exposure Relapse Prevention that unfortunately it's not done in the Valley per se, although... I've been working with some case managers and with the therapist in my clinic, giving them the manual,
mm-hmm.
and that works beautifully for kids with obsessive compulsive disorder. And it's a very structured 12-session therapy. Basically, it's a manual, and it's actually fun to do for the therapist and for the child.
Nice. Well, those always helps when things are fun, especially for kids.
Yeah.
337-8874 is the phone number. Let's talk about it. This is a show. Child and adolescent psychiatrist Dr. Alejandra Postawait is our guest from Behavioral Health. And we're talking about childhood obsessive compulsive disorder. Give us a call, 337-8874, if you'd like to. How common would this be in you know, like out of 100 kids or out of a school of 500 kids?
Well, it's not that common. It's like 1 to 4% of the population.
So one out of every 100.
Yes.
Or up to four, I guess, out of every.
I mean, I guess it is, if you look at it that way, I guess it is kind of.
Well, if you've got 25 kids in your classroom, if it's 4%, you have a chance of having one child.
Exactly. It's 1 to 4%. You know,
yeah.
We don't really know exactly, but it's 1 to 4%. In childhood, it's more common in boys, and in adolescents, it tends to be equal.
It's that whole missing bottom part of that X chromosome that we lack.
Probably.
It's your genetic stuff to avoid this. But is that true for adults also then? Is it more common in males or?
It's, no, it, for, it,
most
it's
of my
the
best
same.
Obsessive friends are females.
It's the same.
Okay. So, but in the childhood version, is it something that comes and goes? Is it temporal? Is it?
Well, it's, like I said, it could be chronic. But it's intermittent.
Okay.
Like
it flares up.
It can fluctuate. It can let's say there could be a remission period, and then the patient can relapse, especially when there's changes in their life.
Yeah, that was I was mm-hmm. gonna because you know working in drug and alcohol, it's like relapse typically has some etiology to it where something's triggering.
Yes.
Ultimately.
If there's a trigger. Exactly.
So what kind of behaviors would this look like in a child, basically?
Well,
what kind of range of behaviors?
One of the most common behaviors is germophobia, which is phobia to germs.
I thought everybody had it now. H1N1.
Well, yes. I know. That can really flare up some OCD people around there, the H1N1.
Oh yeah, because it's like nonstop and.
I know. But it's basically that's one of the most common obsessive thoughts. Like everything is contaminated with germs, and the compulsion is the hand washing.
Well, and it's beautiful because ultimately we have much, relatively, not so much control over germs as we would like to,
mm-hmm.
because germs are ubiquitous.
Yes.
They are found in nature. Period. And we have quite a few of them that are actually doing some helpful things in our body.
Exactly. And also there's, in children, we see a lot of sexualized obsessions.
Ooh.
And usually, like, the kids feel pretty bad about that. I mean, they have, like, sexual intrusive thoughts. For example, I've seen kids who have sexual thoughts about their parents, their mother. And they don't want to have those thoughts.
And these are pre-puberty kids. These are kids that haven't crossed over.
And they don't want to have those thoughts. I mean, it's not like they're enjoying those thoughts. You know what I mean?
Right.
Or about their sisters.
If you haven't passed puberty, you don't really have a concept of sexuality
mm-hmm.
as such.
Mm-hmm. But they just, like, focus on, I don't know, they see, a female body and they start
curiosity or mystery
well,
or whatever.
They start getting obsessed and have all these intrusive thoughts, and it's really, really uncomfortable for the kids to have those thoughts. Also, religious obsessions, but mostly the most common ones that I've seen are germs or for example, poisoning, that they need to spit because they think they're poisoned, or they have the obsession that they're poisoned, or that their saliva is poisoned, stuff like that.
So if they're tied to behaviors like spitting or washing your hands every, how often, every 5 minutes, every half hour?
Well, it depends. I mean, it varies from patient to patient.
But like more than
normal,
so.
It's disruptively.
Because
uh-huh.
I think we're telling kids to wash their hands all the time now. It seems like those overt behaviors would be, and to somebody who's kind of paying attention to it anyway, it would be kind of an easy indicator.
Mm-hmm.
Like, oh, wait a minute, there's something going on here, and you know, hopefully they come to you and you say, oh yeah, I know what it is, and this is what we do about it.
Yeah.
But something like sexual thoughts, for example, because it's so forbidden, or maybe religious thoughts even, because they're so overwhelming or
mm-hmm.
intense, or perhaps there's some shame associated with it. They're not, kids aren't going to talk about that, are they? I mean, not right.
No, not right away.
Mom, I'm really distracted because mm-hmm. I'm seeing you naked all the time. It's not going to happen.
Mm. Exactly. It's really hard for them to talk about.
So these kids are going to show their impairment in different kind of ways, huh? Like a rapid drop in grades or...
Exactly, withdraw from peers, stay in their room, lack of socialization, all that stuff. Yeah. Depression.
And I was thinking to say that behavior set, the kind of lack of, you know, desocialization, if you will, and academic failure after you've already shown some success at one point in time.
Exactly.
Could be indicative of anything, which may make it important to actually have it diagnosed and have somebody look at it who's professional at assessing things.
Yes, yes. And sometimes OCD in children can look like psychosis even. I mean, because it can be so severe. I once had a case a long time ago, not here in the Valley, a long time ago, about a child who was obsessed with drawing terrains. And he had a notepad, and he would draw terrains and would plot all this, like, fake combat in the terrains. And it didn't really bother, because for adults, one of the criteria is that the obsessions bother them.
Right.
For children, not necessarily. They don't need to bother them in order for to be OCD.
Because children don't have that kind of parentified evaluation.
They don't have that kind of insight yet. For a lot of them, it does bother them, but it doesn't need. It's not a criteria. And this child, well, he was not bothered by the terrains, but he couldn't go to school. He would be obsessed with drawing his terrains. Would carry his notebook around. And he was totally affected by it.
So he would say, "Mom, I'm staying home sick today," and just draw trains.
He was like totally withdrawn.
He wasn't even listening to his mom when his mom was saying getting ready for school. He's like drawing trains and not paying attention.
I remember I was doing my fellowship and I thought that he had psychosis. And I remember my attending a brilliant child psychiatrist in Los Angeles. He's like, no, this child has OCD. But I had never seen an obsession like that. I mean, that totally just incapacitated him completely. I mean, he was totally incapacitated. And I just thought it was really strange. I mean, it was just strange. And he would talk about it all the time and all the time, all the time, all the time. And I remember we started him on fluoxetine and got him up to...
Which has a generic name.
Prozac.
Thank you.
Well, when it still wasn't patent. And we got him up to like 80 milligrams, like really, really high doses, and he responded. Took him a long time to respond to the medication, but he did. And he got better.
Is it... How would the medication, neurochemically, what do we think is going on with the medication that helps break the cycle?
Well, you know, we don't really know. Like I said, I mean, apparent parts of the brain are not connected like they need to be, and the synapses is not send, the signals are not sent like they need to be, like normally they would.
Maybe the brain's like a terrain and the little Prozac soldiers are fighting and beating up the OCD soldiers.
Well, something like that. I guess it's serotonergic, like depression, like most anxiety disorders. It has something to do with serotonin, low levels of serotonin in the brain. You give serotonin, basically, reuptake inhibitors, you increase the levels of serotonin in the brain, and these, hopefully these disorders would get better. And a lot of them do. I mean, fluoxetine is a very, very good medication for children. It's actually the only one that has proven to work for anxiety disorders in kids who are less than 12 years old.
So it's FDA approved for use in under 12?
Yes, yes. We use fluoxetine or we use Luvox for OCD, usually those two. But Luvox, it interacts with a lot of different medications, so I tend to use more fluoxetine. I think it's a little bit safer.
Going to the fastest and easiest one.
Well, the safest. Yeah, the safest.
That's a big consideration, I guess, with kids. Huh?
Exactly. Exactly.
Because their brains are still developing, and when you throw in things that affect neurotransmitter balances.
Yeah. But, OCD is... It, I, I, it's a fascinating disorder, and it's very, very treatable, especially with a combination of medication and the therapy. And like I said, the therapy is fun. It's very intense. And let me tell you a little bit about the therapy.
Well, we'll do that right after. Okay. I was going to say, you know, I'm afraid that you were going to start saying that OCD is so fascinating that you study it over and over and over, and you're letting all of your other cases fall to the wayside. And no, sorry. This is Let's Talk About It. We'll take a short top of the hour break. We'll be right back with more of the show.
You're listening to the complete podcast version of Imperial County Behavioral Health Service Let's Talk About It, brought to you by KXLRadio.com.
Good morning. Bonjour. Buenos dias. Welcome back, if you indeed have been listening. If you're just tuning in, well, welcome to you too. Good morning. A little bit cooler outside, kind of feeling better. You know, the reason it's getting colder is because the sun's in the sky less time, and it's at a lower angle of incidence. So it's not able to directly heat everything quite as much as it used to. And that's a good thing for me. I grew up in Michigan, and like by August, we had flannel shirts on, and there was frost. And it's amazing how attuned your body gets to seasons. And I'm fine, you know, in July when it's hot. Well, it's hot in Michigan. I'm fine. It's like normal. But when it doesn't start to turn in August, I get like really distressed. I go through like a week where I'm like, why isn't it just happening? And I'm like, oh, yeah, that's right. I live in the desert now. Welcome back anyway. 337-8874 is the phone number. As you might have guessed, Maria is out and about having a good time doing some conferences with other alcohol and drug administrators. And we're here today with Dr. Alejandra Postowicz. She's a child and adolescent psychiatrist for Imperial County. What a coincidence.
Yes.
We always go to Imperial County for our people. So it's Where are you stationed now?
3 days of the week in Calexico, Monday, Tuesday, and Wednesday, and then Thursday and Friday here in El Centro.
Nice. You basically the Calexico psychiatrist.
Yes.
All of the kids. Now.
Yes. Yeah, it's great.
How is that going? I worked in Calexico with the kids for like 5-6 years, so
I like it a lot. I like the Calexico population.
It's funny because we go from city to city in the valley, and I worked in Raleigh for several years too, and I've worked in El Centro for several years. And there's really pretty distinct cultural differences between the communities.
Yeah.
And Calexico's got this kind of homogeneousness that makes it almost easier to operate in because there's kind of a more predictable set of where people are going to be coming from.
Well, everybody is Hispanic mostly. I don't think I have any, let me think. Yeah, I don't think I have any Caucasian patients in Calexico. Not that I can think of, and here I do.
Well, not only Hispanic, I would say, but also, like, homogeneously Hispanic in a way. Just that the whole kind of culture.
Exactly.
Is very, and I down in Calexico, I had to stop people from calling me doctor all the time. I was like a case manager. Dr. Scott. No. Not doctor. We have a real doctor, and she's here on the show. Because culturally, that was their way of looking at healing professionals.
Yes, you know, yes, exactly.
Their way of grabbing that and dealing with it.
Yes.
And very advice-driven compared to some different cultural places. So it was, okay, just tell me what to do, and I'll do it, and because you're the one who knows, because you're the healer. And for me, it was kind of an interesting place to be because I'm pretty existential, and you know, I'm like, well, what do you want to do? And we had to fight that through culturally.
Yeah, I sometimes ask them, well, what do you think? Do you want me to increase the medication? Do you think? I mean, are you comfortable with that? Well, whatever you want.
People's eyes get really big, or.
But you know, it the parents obviously need to be, and actually, when they're adolescents, the child also needs to be in agreement to make changes.
Well, and there's kind of a baseline here because you're the doctor, so you're not going to recommend, you're not going to ask their opinion on a dosage increase if there's any harm associated with that.
Exactly,
so
exactly.
That's your oath.
Exactly.
Yeah. So 337-8874 is the phone number. Obsessive compulsive disorder in children is the topic, and we talked briefly, you know, we talked to the first part of the show about kind of what are the identifiers, what are we looking for, and I guess the two biggest behavior things were related to germophobia with hand washing, or fear of poisoning where they might spit or have rituals about their food to...
Their food, exactly.
You know, if I do this certain set of things over my food, it will depoison it or something, huh?
Yes, and sexualized.
Yeah. and sexualized or religious thoughts may be harder to detect because mm-hmm. they're not as behavioralized, perhaps. And they, I guess they may be behavioralized too, but typically maybe not as much in kids.
Exactly. They might be only obsessions with no compulsion.
Okay. So if we have a kid with failing grades who was doing well in school, I mean, that's really a differentiation there because it separates it from some other things.
Mm-hmm.
And someone who's perhaps withdrawn socially, we have enough of a reason for concern now because of the impairment that we probably want to get our kids in to have them assessed, and maybe start with a pediatrician and maybe keep going to behavioral health if that's, you know, there wasn't some kind of biophysical reason for this.
Yes.
Okay. What kind of questions do you ask to differentiate obsessive compulsive from, I don't know, depression or some sort of trauma reaction or something else?
Well, for example, like, do you have an uncomfortable, if it is uncomfortable, no, like I said, it sometimes the thoughts are not uncomfortable, but a persistent, recurrent, intrusive thought that is always in your head, that it's hard to get it out of your head. Do you have that?
Do kids feel a sense of relief or liberation when you ask that question? Because
Sometimes they do. Thank goodness.
I can finally tell somebody about this.
And do you do anything to relieve that thought that you have in your head? Yes, well, I do this, or I wash my hands, or, you know, I do this and that to relieve this thought. Like the kid that had that was doing the terrain, he had the thought that he knew something that actually he never told anybody. He never told anybody in the hospital that he knew something about the world. And he had that obsession that he knew something about the world that nobody knew, that he couldn't talk about it, that it was very, very bad. And part of his obsessions and his compulsions was drawing the terrains.
So maybe if I draw this enough times, it will cease to haunt me.
Exactly.
Now, when you get indicators for obsessive compulsive disorder in children, do you, inside yourself, because you don't want to be too obvious, do you breathe a sigh of relief? Because this is a relatively treatable disorder compared to some of the other ones, or is it, you know, average, or is it more difficult than others to work with?
I believe it's treatable. Like, I've had good success rates with my patients with OCD. So it's treatable, but, you know, it can be chronic. So, you know, sometimes kids need to be on medication for long periods of time, then you take the medication off when they're in remission, they could relapse. So, no psychiatric disorder, do you feel a relief as a doctor when you diagnose a kid with, you know, I mean, but it's better than bipolar or schizophrenia. I mean, much better. I mean, it's treatable. People can function pretty well with that disorder.
So no sigh of relief, but at least a little kind of, okay.
Exactly.
We know what we've got, and we've got a path to work.
Yeah, I mean, it's better than, like, PTSD. I mean, it's better than it's not as severe as other disorders, I would say. But again, I mean, it could be super incapacitating. I mean, it just depends on what their obsessions are and what their compulsions are. You know what I mean?
Does the degree of incapacitation indicate how hard it is going to be to make it go away?
Yeah.
So that's, if it's really incapacitating, it may be more difficult to, mm-hmm. or maybe more prone to relapse.
Yes. I mean, like germophobia, one of the most common obsessions, and hand washing, that tends to be pretty treatable. I once had a client that he had like a severe fear like of germs and dirty laundry and couldn't dry his hands on the towels that were in the bathroom.
Because they're just coated with germs from other people.
Exactly. Or for example, he would see like a little spot on, like, let's say this spot here on the table, and he would think it would be excrement. Or like a little spot somewhere, and he would think everything would be excrement, and he couldn't dry himself with anything, basically. It would need to be like a clean towel, and I remember we used this therapy that I was talking about, and we exposed him to like a whole bunch of dirty laundry. Like basically, I sat him on
germ-laden laundry.
Uh huh. And that's, I wanted to talk about the treatment.
Yeah. This is a good thing.
But so we sat him down in a chair, and I asked the mom to bring like a bag of dirty laundry and dirty towels and everything, underwear, everything. And we wrapped him up in all the dirty laundry.
Was he willing to engage in this? Or?
He was willing to engage, but it was really hard for him, and that's part of the exposure relapse prevention. So we exposed him, basically, to his biggest fear. And because the dose was so massive, I mean, it actually went away.
So there's a way, behaviorally, I guess, almost, mm-hmm. to overwhelm, basically prove the compelling thought wrong
exactly.
through massive exposure.
Exactly. So let me talk a little bit about exposure relapse prevention.
Yes,
so it's 12 weeks, 12 sessions. I mean, it could
yeah,
go...
Yeah, 12 seems to be the magic number in treatment.
Exactly, I know. And the first one or two sessions is psychoeducation. You talk to the parents, you talk to the kids, you tell them what you're going to do, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. And then you do a hierarchy. So a hierarchy of your obsessions, basically. And then you write next to it, like, what compulsions you do to get rid of those obsessions. So, for example, you write a hierarchy with the worst obsession that you have on top. Let's say, for example, your biggest fear. Fear of...
So if you're germophobic, for example, there's probably... a list of things that you've identified ahead
exactly.
that are like the forbidden 10.
Exactly. So you put, you know, on top, like number one.
What's number one?
Excrement. Number two, I don't know, whatever, rotten food. Number three, like that, like going down, and then you start exposing the patient very slowly from the least, the lowest in the hierarchy. To the highest in the hierarchy. Very exposing. It can be, I mean, because obviously, you know, I don't know, I mean, if it's excrement number one, I mean, you can't, you know, I don't know, you can't really... Well,
in a way, you'd almost hope excrement was not number 10, because then you'd have to deal with that one first.
I know, I mean, you expose the patient to the best that you can. You know what I mean? I mean, it could be, if you can't physically expose him, to his biggest fear, or to whatever is in his hierarchy, you expose him with imagery.
Oh, okay, okay.
Okay, so I remember also this kid, the kid with a phobia to towels. So we exposed him to the towels. We exposed him to a public toilet. So he had to touch the toilet. The seat.
I know lots of unimpaired people who won't ever go anywhere near public toilets.
He had to go. He had to touch it. We also exposed him. Those were all in his hierarchy. We also exposed him to... He was afraid.
And he wasn't allowed to wash his hands, like, right away.
Yeah, he can't wash his hands right away.
Okay.
At all. And then we exposed him to... He also had a fear of needles and getting his blood drawn. So that was tough to expose because it was... I had to expose him in little baby steps.
Right.
So first, like, you know, fake with a pencil and act like if I was going to draw his blood, like if that was a needle, and go step by step.
Symbolically first.
Symbolically,
you know,
to the point of walking him. I mean, I was in a hospital, so it was easier walking him to the lab. Having him sit where, when people were getting his blood draw, their blood draw, and then like slowly having him like grab a needle. So slowly to the point that he was able to get his blood draw. So,
and the trick to this is basically not having the thoughts overwhelm them with some sort of anxiety response.
Exactly. So you basically expose them slowly, 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 slowly to all the things in the hierarchy.
Keep a close eye on them in case you have to back down a little bit? Or?
Exactly. You okay. keep a very, I mean, these are very structured sessions.
Well, and kids may not be, I mean, I think with adults maybe you could say, okay, if you get like above a 6 on a 1 to 10 scale of nervous, let me know. With kids, they may not have that subjective scale down because of just the developmental level as much as anything.
Yes.
So you have to watch them and check heartbeat and respiration and all the kind of indicators.
But I mean, reality is the worst that can happen is that they can have an anxiety attack. That's it. And
right.
They're not
right. So it's not fatal.
And you need to help them understand that they are not going to die. It's not fatal. The worst that can happen is an anxiety attack. They're going to feel like crap, but you know, it's not like they're going to die. So I mean, it's really a good treatment.
Nice. 337-8874 is the phone number. Let's talk about her, Dr. Alejandra Postlewaite, who is a child and adolescent psychiatrist for Imperial County. We're heading in the home stretch, so if you have any questions about OCD in children, which is so fascinating that Dr. Postlewaite actually stopped doing everything else in her life and just studies it over and over again. No, just kidding. If you have any questions about childhood OCD, you've got the expert here. 337-8874, and I'm sure she'd be happy to take your calls. So you've got these gradual levels of exposure. You get to number one if you can.
You try to get there.
Is this hard? Is this more difficult with sexuality? I would assume.
Yes, and it's a delicate area. Again, when we used to do it, we were able to expose kids to. I mean, obviously, you know, with appropriate manner, we won't. You know, we couldn't do inappropriate things, but we would expose the kids to imagery. Or for example, they would draw an image on the board.
So they draw, he's going to fight through the phone.
Ah, okay.
So they draw an image on the board and...
They would draw an image on the board.
They corresponded to their thoughts or something.
Exactly. And all, I mean, it was very delicate. Always we had a one-way mirror. You know what I mean? We had a one-way mirror. There was people on the one-way mirror looking at what we were doing, you know, because, I mean, there needs to be...
Safeguards. Exactly. Risk management, I believe that's called.
Exactly. I mean, because it is a delicate area.
Well, and if you have the child produce the stimulus from their own thoughts, you haven't brought anything else into the milieu. I mean, basically, you're not providing the stimulus. It's coming from inside of them. So it's already there.
Exactly.
So you're not contributing to the delinquency of
A
person who doesn't understand why they're having sexual thoughts.
Yes. Is that a call or?
No.
Oh.
It was
okay.
Like half a call.
Oh, okay.
So 337-8874. Call back if that was what your intention was. Okay. So you've got a medication support program with Prozac, I guess, primarily.
Yes, that's the one that I primarily use.
And you've got this behavioral exposure.
Yes.
And those two things pretty consistently, I guess, would get you under some level of...
Hopefully remission.
Remission.
Yeah, hopefully remission.
So remission means it's there, but it's not active.
Exactly.
So what kind of stuff do we do in terms of relapse prevention, or how does this get watched as the person grows and develops to make sure it doesn't jump up and grab them again?
Well, follow up with a psychiatrist and booster sessions with a therapist. So, I mean, it's... Oh, somebody wants to ask.
We have a caller on the air. Good morning, caller.
This is exciting.
Here, you actually get the official headphones.
Ah, okay.
That's
what
the caller does. Well, there's no germs on those, by the way.
There's no germs. Hello.
Okay, there you go. Can you hear the caller?
No.
How are you?
There we go. Can you hear them now?
Yes, I can.
I was calling to find out if how young of an age can you start detecting OCD in children?
Well, I mean, the youngest that I've seen is around 8. But, I mean, you can literally see it in a child who's around 6 or so. You can start seeing the behaviors.
And do they start treatments that early as well?
Yes. Yes, definitely. Definitely.
Okay.
Usually when a child is, let's say, below 8 years old, you start with cognitive behavioral therapy first instead of medication.
Okay. Okay, great. Thank you very much. I appreciate the answer.
You're welcome.
And we appreciate the call. Thank you very much. Again, 337-8874. We've got about 4 minutes left, so if you have additional questions or comments for the doctor,
Do I take my earphones off?
No, we'll keep it just in case we get another call.
Oh, okay.
And as a special today, because we're on Let's Talk About It, this is your voice for wellness in the Imperial Valley, the doctor will not charge you for these consultations. So we're doing our part for free and universal health care in the United States. So how do you stop medication eventually once you've got this under control? You do your 12 sessions of cognitive therapy, and typically that would be...
Well, you want the kid to be on medication for like 12 to 18 months at least, to have a long period of remission.
So it's not like a virus. It's not like 2 weeks and...
No. And then you discuss the possibility of discontinuing.
Okay.
But you also discuss the possibility of relapse.
When you do that, do you taper off gradually or just...
You know what? Prozac, no. Because Prozac tapers itself off. That's what I like about it.
You stop taking it and your serotonin levels naturally balance out.
It tapers itself off. So that I like Prozac because of that. Because if kids all of a sudden abruptly discontinue it, nothing really happens. You know, because kids sometimes are not compliant to meds. Another call?
Another call.
Very exciting.
We're lighting up those phone lines. Great to hear it.
Hello?
Hello?
Yes, hi.
Hi. Okay, my question is, I have a 4-year-old grandchild, and he has certain little rituals, say stacking canned goods, when he's going along the sidewalk on his bike, he has to stop, and there's stepping stones, and he has to stop and go over them back and forth, and it's always a ritual that he does these things.
Uh-huh.
Is that considered an OCD trait?
It could be an OCD trait, but it also could be normal, or it also could be sort of like part of a pervasive developmental disorder. I mean, does he have any other symptom, like delayed speech?
Oh, no. There's no problem there.
Oh, okay.
His vocabulary is quite expansive and quite advanced for his age.
Okay. And can he make friends?
Oh, yes.
He's able to make friends?
Oh, yes. He's very, very social.
Okay. Well, I would keep an eye on those behaviors. I mean, are they impacting his daily living?
Oh, no. No.
Okay.
No.
I mean, I would keep an eye on those behaviors. I mean, little kids, sometimes they have those rituals just to feel more comfortable in the world, basically. But he's too young to diagnose him with OCD, especially if they are not impacting his daily living.
Oh, yes. There's no problem with his daily living. I mean, insofar as, you know, educational learning abilities like colors and all the normal little things they do at that age, that's pretty good.
And another question, is there a family history of OCD or of anxiety disorders?
No.
Okay, because OCD and other anxiety disorders are hereditary. So let's say if there is a family history and he has this little, you know, little traits, he would have a higher probability of developing an anxiety disorder as compared to other kids. So, but just keep an eye on him.
Okay, great. Thank you.
Okay, you're welcome.
Bye. That was, in a way, a startling phone call for me because I'm thinking back to all of the little things I invented as a child, just kind of, you know, going through your environment that could have some impact on the environment. So you invent little rituals.
Exactly. And when a kid is that young, that's why I asked the questions about socialization. I would go more toward a PDD, pervasive developmental disorder spectrum, because like kids with autism, Asperger's, PDD, they also have those type of rituals and, you know, of little obsessive little things that are not actually OCD.
I'm remembering the first, you know, the childhood rhyme about sidewalks.
Mm-hmm.
Step on a crack, break your mother's back or whatever.
Exactly.
And so we were like all walking very carefully on the sidewalks all the way to like a mile of school. Yeah. Not stepping in any single cracks because there was some, you know, imaginary belief there that that would actually happen or something.
I mean, little kids have a very, very vivid imagination, which is, I mean, even imaginary friends, which is totally normal until they reach age 7.
Yeah, the werewolf living in the basement stairway underneath it was a little bit disconcerting. I certainly hurried up the basement stairs when I was alone. But I also told my daughter about it when she was 6. So I said, hey, guess what? I used to have a friend with a werewolf lived under the stairs, and we hurried up the stairs. And now she's in that place now where she can, you know, open up to stuff like that. And,
yeah.
You know, when you're 6 years old, there are ghosts.
Exactly.
There are all sorts of magical things running around.
Yeah.
Well, you know, thank you, callers, first of all, because isn't that a fun way to wrap up a show?
Definitely.
You got to hear the doctor in action, and that was kind of fun, watching you go through your questions. And
well, thank you. Thank you for calling.
And again, Dr. Postlewaite, thank you for coming back to our community and contributing, and we're very fortunate to have you. And
well, thank you. I'm very happy to be here.
And for the people in the community that have concerns about their children, this is kind of the level of treatment you're going to get in Imperial County Mental Health. So if that's the place you go with your health care program, then really, honestly, encourage you to come in, because how long should a child suffer because they don't get the help that is available?
And I have to say that I've been in different areas of the United States, and Imperial Valley Behavioral Health has really good treatment. I mean, it has really good team, very complete treatment for the kids. So.
There you go. So, from the doctor's office. Thank you for listening, and thank you, Dr. Postlewaite, for coming over today. Appreciate it.
Thank you. Bye-bye. Have a nice day.
Join us again for another exciting adventure of Let's Talk About It, Your Voice for Wellness, next week. And Marie will be back, and I'll be here, and we'll have a great big party. All right. Thanks again. Have a great week.
You've been listening to Let's Talk About It, heard each Thursday morning at 7:30 a.m. on KGBO 88.7 FM, Rosa Bilingue. Presented by Imperial County Behavioral Health Services, and brought to you as a podcast by KXRadio.com.